Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this very nice Monday morning in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. It's been a busy morning for me so far, for my guests as well. They appeared earlier this morning on Channel 41 to talk about their play. They're from the Barn Players, and they're opening this Friday, the 16th of September, in Kiss of the Spider Woman. It was a major motion picture back in the day. The actor, I believe, won a Best Actor or Best Supporting Actor award. I don't recall which one, but a very interesting story. They're doing it at the Barn. We're going to talk to them about the show right now. J.C. Dresler is with us. She plays the Spider Woman in Kiss of the Spider Woman. Spider Woman Aurora, kind of a double role. Do you find your mind split in these instances?
Maybe a little bit. No, Aurora is actually an actress who plays a lot of different roles in movies, and one of the characters, which Paul will tell you about, is completely obsessed with Aurora, the actress, and one of the roles she plays is the Spider-Woman, who represents death, basically. So if you get kissed by the Spider-Woman, yeah, you're dead.
She mates and she kills. I've heard that statement before. Yeah. That's true a lot of times. Also.
Yeah.
Paul Brennan is with us. He plays the role of Valentine.
Yeah.
So he is, should I give it away? he plays the man in question in Kiss of the Spider Woman.
So I play Valentine, who is a Marxist revolutionary and ends up in prison sharing a cell with Molina, the other lead actor in the show, and Molina is the one who envisions Aurora and the Spider-Woman and the other characters that Aurora plays, and he does that in a way to sort of escape the confines of prison in his own mind.
Sounds like under different circumstances, that man would have a show on this radio station. A lot of people have different beliefs here on KKFI. We'll talk about that. No, it was a movie back in, I can't remember when, but that actor won an Academy Award for his portrayal.
Yep, William Hurt played Molina, and Raul Julia, who plays Valentine, my character, was in the movie.
Well, and it doesn't matter which one of you does. A brief synopsis of the show for those who don't remember the movie, have never seen the play. What would motivate them to go to the Barn Players and see the show? Tell us the synopsis of the story.
You know, so it's a really compelling, dynamic story, again, about these two very different men who end up in a cell together, and it follows the sort of relationship that grows between the two of them, and they're each different motivations for doing what they do, the passion for each other's cause, and how that sort of brings them together and brings them apart, and who is manipulating who, when, and sort of the ways that they deal with being in prison and what they're willing to do for their causes, and how they sort of escape in their minds. Like you said, Molina uses Aurora and the Spider Woman to sort of escape the situation he's in, and he starts to sort of teach Valentine how to use that. Valentine goes in a different direction, and Valentine to escape prison himself. Valentine imagines his love on the outside, Marta.
Sure. And, you know, in some ways, and I said this to you before the show, reminds me a little bit of Man of La Mancha,
mm-hmm.
at least in that aspect. I mean, that was a musical.
Yeah.
This is a drama.
Yep.
All of that.
Yeah, and sort of the escapism, I guess, between the two characters.
I wonder if people in prison do that. I imagine they do. Do they dream of being in other places in other times, and does that help them deal with the? Because it's a Latin American prison,
right?
Is it revealed which country?
It isn't in the musical. In the book, so before it was a musical and before it was a movie, it was a book. Manuel Pegg wrote the book, and it's set. The book is set in Argentina.
Okay.
I don't know if the film adaptation and certainly the musical adaptation don't necessarily pinpoint it, but they keep the Latin American feel of it.
Are we in the time of, say, Perón, just to throw out someone?
You know, I always looked sort of the Che Revolution.
Che, okay.
That's sort of, that's sort of where I started to think about it when I'm thinking about who Valentine is,
mm-hmm.
And sort of the Marxist ideas that he's wrestling with and what he ultimately adopts.
Yeah, I would have thought Shay would get along with him.
Yeah. Maybe.
You would have thought.
Yeah.
Do we know specifically what he did, or is that kept...
What Valentine did to end up in prison?
Yeah.
Being a part of... It's sort of just being a part of the revolutionary movement. Valentine doesn't lead the revolution in the backstory of the show, but he becomes a sort of high-ranking member of it, and he is captured. And he's used sort of throughout the show to by the warden to get information. He's tortured from the beginning of the show to the end. You don't see it on stage. It's always happening sort of when other things are happening in the show. And it's used to sort of get information on the movement going on outside.
I guess it's another one of many situations where if you disagree, merely disagree with those in power, you're labeled a kook. A dangerous person.
A dangerous person, exactly. Yeah.
And that's why he would be, and that's why he was imprisoned.
Yep.
And is there for some time, you know, and trying to deal with the boredom, I guess the boredom, and the torture, I suppose.
Yep.
And all of that. He, you could probably characterize it better than me, he imagines other things.
Right. So he imagines his world outside, and he's very true to his beliefs, and... For Valentine's story, it is what sort of is he willing to do to continue to push his movement, and will he do what he needs to do to regardless of the fact that he's still in prison, but he's going to be an active member of the movement. He's going to continue to help his comrades outside, and that forces him to make certain decisions and do certain things in prison to continue his passion and continue his movement.
And then one of the things you imagine is this woman.
Right. There was one of his... Molina, early on in the show, sort of teaches Valentine to escape, to deal with the torture and escape through his mind. And from Valentine, that is imagining the love of his life, Marta, who's still on the outside.
J.C. Dresler plays the role, the dual roles of the Spider-Woman and Aurora, kind of a mind splitter, as I asked you earlier. Yeah. But how would you characterize
it? Well, you know, what's fun about this particular show is that when the atrocities of the prison become too much, you know, the torture, the manipulation, which is kind of an underlying theme throughout the entire show, Molina will fantasize about a certain scene from a movie that Aurora was in, and what happens is that particular number comes to life on stage. So he will be in the prison cell, and suddenly Aurora's on stage singing and dancing, and you know, surrounded by, you know, her dancing boys and a big costume. So it's, you know, it adds a little bit of levity to a very, very dark subject. But what's interesting is that he is in control of his fantasies of Aurora, but is not in control of the Spider-Woman. So what happens is she appears throughout the musical. She sort of comes and goes and weaves in and weaves out, but she's unbidden. And so, you know, we talked about the show being about manipulation, and every character in the show is either being manipulated or is manipulating someone else. So Spider-Woman comes on and she's doing a lot of manipulation of her own. And what's interesting about that is she's just a figment of someone's imagination. But he has no control over what she does, where she is, and how she's manipulating him. So it's kind of fun to see her come in and out. So the show itself is dark, but it's funny. There are moments that are extremely touching. There are moments that are, you know, very sweet and also very scary at the same time.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Tell us about some of those songs that you talked about. songs that the public, because this happens all the time with musicals. Sometimes people will know a particular song. Yeah. I've heard that song many times. I never knew where it came from. What are some of the songs in Kiss of the Spider-Woman?
You know, I think one of the most famous ones is Kiss of the Spider-Woman. It's her, it's sort of her big anthem, and it, you hear bits and pieces of it throughout the show. She sings maybe one line of it here and then another line of it here, and at the very end, when everything sort of comes to a head, you hear the whole number. That's kind of the, I think, one of the most famous songs, I think, of the musical.
Sure. Now, where have people seen you before? You have a familiar-looking face. Where have I seen you performing?
Oh, my gosh. I've done Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park. I've done the Chestnut, the Shirley White Theater.
Go ahead and say the shows.
Oh, my gosh. I've done Adelaide in Guys and Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
I was Charity in Sweet Charity, Velma Kelly in Chicago. And I've done Chorus Line twice. I was Cassie the first time, and then fast forward 20 years older, I was Sheila.
Well, you have several parts you can do. You can do the whole trick.
Yeah.
Of shows like that. Yeah, what was different about this role that made you want to seek out and play it?
You know, what's interesting, she doesn't have a lot of speaking lines. You know, I might have 15 lines that I speak. It's all sung. So a lot of what I'm conveying has to be through the song. And I will be in one number where it's fun and light and silly, and then the next one is very dark and very foreboding. So it goes back and forth throughout the whole show. So it's trying to stay in character throughout all these different numbers.
And I have to ask about the costuming as well. Two roles, and when you're singing roles that Aurora played, that he imagines, but actually get performed on the stage of the barn. You have probably a different outfit for each one of those songs.
I do, and they're all very, very different. So, you know, Spider-Woman, of course, is sort of like you'd see in the movie poster, the long black dress, the dark. And then Aurora comes out in feathers and, you know, ruffles for one number, and then in a white suit with a white hat for another number. So I get to play all different kinds of characters throughout the show. It's fun.
Yeah, and the Spider-Woman costume, what all is involved with that?
Very dark. It's kind of like the poster, very long dress, spider web, and kind of the top is sort of spider web looking. I think what will be incredible about the show, the lighting is phenomenal in this show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The special effects and lighting, I think, would be. I guess the jail is very dark. Does it lighten up for the production numbers?
Yeah, so, like JC said, what they're doing with lighting and projections is really, really breathtaking. And the way that we come in and out of the jail cell scenes versus what then is playing in Molina's mind for the musical numbers is really, really exciting. And I'm passed out through a lot of Act One, so I get to so in rehearsal I get to see a lot of the stuff that's happening, which is neat.
Passed out but yet dreaming.
Well, it's Molina that's dreaming a lot more than I am.
Oh, Molina. Okay.
Yeah. I've had a great time sort of watching these guys do these awesome dance numbers.
Yeah, the audience sees what's happening, but it's through the dreams of the prisoners.
Right. It's through the dreams of Molina, and Molina explaining them to Valentin until Valentin can sort of take on his own images. But that's for Valentin. It's Marta.
Yeah. Yeah, well, tell me about your musical director. Was this difficult to do, given the set and all of that?
I would say the music is not easy music to sing. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. I think it is Candor and Ebb, which I love, but it's tough music to sing. And I think more so for the men. You guys have some pretty tough things to count. And the music's amazing. It is. It's beautiful. It's fun and uplifting, and others are very, very dark. It's fantastic music.
Well, tell me about some of the men's numbers. So we covered the ladies.
Yeah.
What do you sing that the audience might remember?
So, you know, probably Valentin's most well-known song is Marta, which isn't actually called Marta. It's called Over the Wall, 3. Mm-hmm. But there's a running theme, this running flow for the rest of the prisoners. Is a song called Over the Wall, and they sing different versions of it at different times. And it's about all of them sort of imagining what is waiting for them outside. And so when Valentin sings it, he's singing about Marta. And so that's done by tenors and baritones in cabarets and things like that. Like it's a well-known tenor sort of song. Mm-hmm. There's a gorgeous, gorgeous quartet that Valentin, Marta, Molina and Molina's mother sing together, which is one of my favorite songs to sing and get to work with these guys. They're got Joel, Natasha, and Joy. They're so good, and it's so much fun to work on that with them.
Yeah, we're speaking with Paul Brennan and J.C. Dresler, two of the characters in the Barn Players production of Kiss of the Spider Woman. It opens this Friday, September 16th at 6:30 p.m. Performances will continue Saturday the 17th, also at 7:30, Sunday the 18th, 2 o'clock p.m. matinee, and basically the next two weekends after that, Friday the 23rd, Saturday evening the 24th, another matinee on Sunday the 25th, a special industry night performance on Monday the 26th at 7:30 p.m., then later that week, Friday the 30th, Saturday, October 1st, and Sunday the 2nd of October, that at 2 o'clock p.m., always a matinee on Sunday at the Barn Players, 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, it's best that you have the zip code to help you MapQuest, 66202. And, of course, you can make your arrangements online at thebarnplayers.org. They also have a phone number. It's a community organization. Someone doesn't answer the phone all the time. You have to wait for them to get back to you. But if there's special considerations, for instance, if you're bringing someone who might be handicapped in some way, it would be best to let them know ahead of time about that so they can help make arrangements for you. That number to call would be 913-432-9100 for Kiss of the Spider Woman, which opens this Friday. Time is getting short. We're speaking with JC and Paul about the show. Ask you about your costumes. Does the Spider Woman come alive more when she's in costume? Is it easy to make that transition from the other characters you play?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because when she comes on, everything changes. So the lighting changes, the mood changes, the music changes. It's very obvious she has kind of a theme, music theme. So before she enters, you're going to hear the same bars of music, which is very foreboding. It lets you know that, Spider-Woman is here.
She's
and
back.
Exactly. And it's not going to bode well for someone because she represents death.
Yes.
So if she kisses you, you're dead. So if she's coming on, someone's not going to do well.
And that goes with actual spiders in science. They mate.
I agree with that.
They mate, and then they kill. So that's not much. That's probably why the spider was chosen.
Agreed.
Maybe perhaps one of the reasons. Now, I don't want to give anything away, of course, but she does represent death. Mm-hmm. So what do you think this means for your character? You don't have to.
I don't know if I'm without giving anything away.
Not too many people get to confront death.
Right. I think they both sort of do, and even more than death, I think Aurora or the Spider Woman comes into play in Molina and Valentin's life together in a very dramatic and foreboding way, and it's sort of it may not be a literal death necessarily, but it is a metaphorical dying of something that's happening between the two of them.
No, sure.
It's been a lot of fun to sort of play that and tease that out and work through that.
Do they plan their activities if they should ever escape or get out?
Well, Valentin, from the moment he's in there, has a very clear understanding of what he needs to do. He continues to be a member of the movement, and it's just a matter of sort of what is he willing to do to make sure that things still go on outside while he is trapped in there, and what he is prepared to do to sort of in a way use Molina. Like JC was saying, sort of one of the most interesting things of the show is the idea of manipulation. Everybody at one point in time is either manipulating or being manipulated. And everybody's doing both those roles at times, and that plays in without giving too much away of sort of what's happening between Molina and Valentin. That ebb and flow of manipulation between the two characters is very, very apparent.
And that's interesting because there's a scene, a very crucial scene towards the end of the show, where it is the Spider-Woman that is manipulating both of them. But the funniest part about that, or the most interesting part about that, is that she's just a figment of his imagination. But she has become a real character. I mean, she has conversations mm-hmm. with Melina. They speak. She answers his questions. She asks him questions. And at the end, towards the end of the show, she is manipulating the two of them. And, you know, so she's sort of become this own, her own character that has power. But she's just in someone's head.
Which leads me to believe that maybe he has a conflict in his mind. I'm not a psychologist, but I don't think you have to be to, if he's imagining that he's being manipulated, then there's something inside his mind that wants that to happen.
I would agree with that. And there are times when he doesn't want to see her. I mean, he basically says, I'm afraid of you. You frighten me. Don't get away from me. Don't come near me. And she just laughs. You know, she's become this actual character, and he has no control over her.
Yeah. I mean, Valentin and Melina are both very much conflicted, but they're conflicted in different ways and at different times, and that's what makes their relationship so interesting, I think.
Yeah. I neglected to ask you where you've been seen before. I should have done that towards the beginning.
It's a short story. this is actually only my second show in the KC area. Mm-hmm. I moved here from Boston.
Did you
back
do
in December.
Things in Boston?
I did. I worked a lot with on the South Shore, in different theaters on the South Shore. I did the Full Monty. I did 1776. I did Drives a Chaperone.
Sure.
Some of the last things that I did. When I moved here in December with my wife, I joined the Okta and did their production of Dogfight.
I see.
From a couple months ago.
I remember. You weren't the one that came to the show for that.
No, I couldn't make it. Yeah, I couldn't make it. It was Kelsey and our director.
Just briefly compare the Boston theater scene to this one. Is it any different?
It's not that different. In the sense that I felt very much. I spent years in Boston. I felt very much at home there, and sort of right away I felt very much at home here. There's so much to do. The people are amazingly nice. Both shows I was really welcomed in by cast and crew and teams. It's really great, and I'm moving halfway across the country, and it made doing theater here made it very, very, very much easier.
Yeah. Moving no matter how far is always a difficult experience.
Yeah.
Just the change of environment.
Sure.
Yeah. Getting past things like that. I'm glad you've settled in.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for the most part.
Do either of you have plans beyond this show? Casting anything so far?
I don't know what I'm doing yet.
No. Yeah. No, just
Theater in the Park this summer to sing? Are you singing at Theater in the Park?
No, not this summer. No, I'm a mom, so I'm just going to be mom for a while. Yeah.
Okay. What about Paul?
Yeah, I'm not good yet about figuring out what I'm doing next and planning out and figuring out what's there. I am still sort of learning the scene a little bit and figuring out what's what, and so I've got to get better about it. But I've been meeting a lot of people in theater, and everyone has been super nice. Everyone's willing to, oh yeah, we'll go out for coffee and we'll have a good time, and I'll tell you about what's going on, and that's been amazing. And so I've just really just going around and meeting folks and learning different theaters and trying to see as much as I can, and just enjoying it.
Oh, sure. Well, you'll see both of them, JC and Paul, in Kiss of the Spider-Woman. It opens this Friday, the 16th of September. Time is getting very short. Are we ready?
I think so.
I think so, yeah.
Yep. If our directors are listening, of course we're ready. They're ready.
Eric and the musical director. Who's the musical director?
Paul Morrell.
Paul Morrell, okay. We'll be starting this Friday night at 7:30. Performances continue then Saturday evening and a Sunday afternoon matinee. That would be... at 2 o'clock p.m. Then the next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday again, evening, afternoon matinee. Monday the 26th at 7:30, a special industry night performance. Then another weekend, Friday the 30th, Saturday the 1st, both at 7:30. Closing with a Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m., all at the Barn Players of Johnson County. The Barn, of course, is located at 6219 Mart Way in Mission, Kansas, right across the street from the, is it Sylvester Powell building in Mission, Kansas? So that's where they're located. The number to call for more information, we'll get back to you right away because no one mans that. It's a community theater organization. They're very good. They're very well organized, but you will probably have to leave a message. 913-432-9100. But a lot more information and more immediate can be had by going to their website, thebarnplayers.org. And yes, you must have the in there. In fact, at one time there was two Barn Players here in the Kansas City area. So I guess there are still two. One only operates on a part-time basis. Again, located at 6219 Mart Way in Mission, Kansas, right across the street from the Sylvester Powell. Oh, it's kind of a recreation center or something. Meetings. There's exercise equipment in there. I've been in there. I've seen it. The show directed by Eric Mangus and musical director
Paul Morrell.
Paul Morrell, all kicking off on this Friday. At the 16th at 7:30 p.m. I should have asked you, can you think of the musicians' names? I haven't given you enough time or preparation for that. But undoubtedly a great combo. A full orchestra?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, full orchestra. Full. Paul put together a great group of people. We got to do we did our Sitz Probe last couple days ago. Yeah. And that's always one of my favorite nights.
Mine too.
Listening to the orchestra for the first time and working that together. Oh, it's so much fun.
Okay, well, I enjoyed having both of you on the show today.
Thank you very much.
J.C. Dressler, who plays the dual roles of the Spider-Woman and Aurora, and Paul Brennan, who plays the role of Valentine. Who's the actor who plays your compatriot in prison?
Joel Ramsdell.
Joel Ramsdell. Plays the role of Molina in Kiss of the Spider-Woman, opening this Friday evening at the Barn Players of Johnson County, thebarnplayers.org. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a break now. Didn't that go quickly? Things always go so quickly for us here. We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to have some people from the Lyric Opera with us. They're going to talk about the Grimm fairy tale set to opera, Hansel and Gretel, when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host, part of the Arts lineup here on KKFI. We have arts programming during the week. Every week we have Arts Magazine, this program, Mondays at noon. We have Art Speak Radio, Wednesdays at noon. Other shows kick in. Sometimes Charles Ferrugia on Friday has an arts guest. All to cover what's going on in the arts community, the professionals, and the community theaters as well. All right here on KKFI as we do our best to cover what's going on. This last weekend, there was a lot of things going on. It was hard to pick where to go and what to do. And coming up next weekend, our guest from the Lyric Opera will be on the stage of the beautiful Kauffman Center to sing with us. Two of the people in the show, Hansel and Gretel, are one's a resident artist, April Martin, who plays the role of the Drew Fairy, and the apprentice, Laura Weir, who plays the role of Sandman in Hansel and Gretel. It's, of course, based on a Grimm's fairy tale written by, I had to laugh when I first read this, Engelbert Humperdinck, but not the one we know of. So apparently he took his stage name, and it is a stage name because I looked it up, from that character who contributed to this opera. Well, but anyway, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We might explain resident artists and apprentices. I know the Lyric Opera does a lot of that.
Yes, so we just started this resident artist program. There are four of us. I'm April, and I'm the soprano. And then our mezzo is Samantha Gossard, and tenor Casey Candabat, and baritone John Viscardi. And then we have a new coach. He's a pianist, and his name is Kyle Naig. And then Laurel can talk about the apprentice program.
Yeah, this is partnered with UMKC's conservatory. So not only do we have minor roles at the opera downtown, but then we're also we're provided a chance to go to take classes up to 9 credit hours. We perform in the operas there as well. And so it's a nice way to get an education and be a part of the professional world as well.
And do something you really love as well.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I took note. The opera is sung in German with English subtitles, which meant, of course, you both had to learn German at some point. Did you learn that in college?
I actually, after college, went to Germany and Austria. I did the Goethe Institute for 4 weeks, and then this summer program, the American Institute of Musical Studies in Graz, Austria. So that was my beginning, my introduction to German. And then in grad school, I took a couple semesters also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in Salzburg, Austria for a program for about a month and living there, speaking the language and then taking some classes as well. But then diction classes at the conservatory help a lot. So you at least know how to pronounce the words. And,
yeah. Sure. Is it best to learn how to do it that way? They used to teach phonics. Is it similar?
It's similar. Mm-hmm. You have a language like IPA is what we call it, and it's a way to spell out the way that you pronounce a word. And so once you learn the IPA language, there's all sorts of resources that you can do to translate and look up how to pronounce the words. But it is best just to be fluent, just learn the language.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm amazed. If singing isn't hard enough.
You're right.
Singing in a language not your native tongue, so to speak, it has to be really difficult. Now, other operas, there's a lot of operas in Italian, and some are in French and other languages. You have to learn a smattering of every one.
You do. You become as fluent as possible, and then you rely on the ears of your voice teacher and the coaches, the pianists you work with, and then also conductors and directors can also catch you on things when they want a stress to be in a different place when they have really great ears, and so you just trust them to fix things, and then you check in, is this right? Am I continuing to say this correctly?
Yeah, and our great composers, too, that write these operas, they know the language, typically. They're either fluent or they can speak it themselves, and so when they compose, the musical stress also aligns with how you would speak it, and so often if you trust the music, you'll be in a lot better place. So that helps.
Well, the stories were originally written, based on things. In this case, a Grimm's fairy tale. Mm-hmm. And the Grimm's fairy tales, we see them as children's cartoons. But Grimm's fairy tales were grim.
Yeah, right.
They were dark.
Dark, tragic, yes. Very different than how we see them.
Very right. And I want to have some fun, but I'm afraid I don't know all the details. But this Engelbert Humperdinck, who reimagined the fairy tale. Do either one of you know much about him?
I know that he was he really appreciated Wagner's music, and so the orchestra is huge. You wouldn't expect these little kids, in quotes, to be singing with this great orchestra, but the orchestra is huge. There are lots of instruments, lots of brass. It's not maybe what you'd expect. This was his one famous opera, but he did a really good job with it.
It's beautiful music.
It has been proven because everybody does it again and again and again, and they do different spins on the production. Some are very typical. You have little kids. They get lost in the woods. Then they get into a gingerbread house. That's what you expect, and our production is a little different. Mm-hmm. We go with a different spin. It's set in the 30s during the Depression, and then there are all these dancers that come on stage, and they are carnies, carnival workers.
Oh, sure. You have to watch out for those carnies.
Right. Yeah, they are. So they lure the kids, and there's a carousel in Act 3. Mm-hmm. It's just a very different spin on the typical Hansel and Gretel.
Doug Verone, our director, I love his vision with it because he wants to keep it the lighthearted and the fun and, part of it, but he also does have, the dark, grim part to it, and so it's an abandoned playground that they get lost in, and it's kind of like the witch is this sideshow act gone bad, essentially, so she's like the fat lady, the bearded lady, whatever, that you see on those old posters, and so she's the witch, and so it's just visually, so stimulating visually, and it'll keep you entranced for sure.
Yeah, now Laurel plays the Sandman. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that character.
Well, typically, like, both of our characters are little fairies, and so you have a soprano play the Sandman because, you know, it's just a little dinky voice. Well, in this production, the Sandman is an actual grown man, so I'm going to have a little bit of a bigger voice than what you typically hear for this role.
I'm trying to sing lower than you would normally sing?
No, just bigger. It's just a fuller sound. That's the way I know how to describe it. And a darker color, if anybody's familiar with, you know, like timbre and all that. But the kids, so they're frightened, they're scared to death, and they're holding each other, and they're lost in the woods, and everything that moves they think is a person trying to come and get them. And so they, you know, close their eyes and hold each other and are just hoping and wishing that whatever these scary things are that are moving, it's something good. And the something good is the Sandman that comes out, and I'm actually in this white tuxedo and real smooth, like a little soft shoe action, so I had to dance like choreography that I was not before familiar with. But Doug was very good with me. He gave me all the steps that I needed. And so I come out and just ever so sweetly, you know, sprinkle some glitters dust here and just sing to him and help him fall asleep. Uh-huh. And so I'm like the sweet, pure one in my white tux. And then Miss April comes out later.
The Drew Fairy. Dew Fairy.
Yes. Yeah, so okay. I sprinkle dew. I'm supposed to sprinkle dew and wake them up.
Okay.
I keep saying, wake up, wake up. And in most productions, she has beautiful wings, and she just kind of descends upon the stage, and everything is great, and she spritzes them with dew, and they wake up. But in this one, I am a carny who is over it. So I come out chewing bubble gum, and I pull it out of my mouth and stick it to the nearest thing, and the dancers lift me around. I have these big, beautiful red wings. And a blonde wig. I am a carny. I just am over my job. I hate it. And so there's some sass and some comedy in that at the beginning of that.
A little bit of attitude, yeah.
Some attitude, yeah.
You have to watch those carnies.
Right, yeah.
Not to offend any of you, you might have worked in a carnival, but don't you be a little on the stage, sorry.
Yeah. Right, right.
And that's part of the fun, actually.
Right, oh yeah.
Of going.
So it's been really fun to get to know these dancers. They're actually in Doug Verone's troupe in New York City. And we like to use dancers from the Kansas City Ballet. Last year I was in Rusalka, and we used dancers there, which are it's wonderful. But this has been kind of extra cool because they really know what this director wants because they work with him all
the
time.
It's like his kids. It's like the whole family, you know.
Yeah.
Doug Verone and company.
Yeah.
Well, April, tell me about your outfit.
So I am in a red and gold leotard. red fishnets, red heels, a blonde wig, and an awesome crown. I have a cape and these amazing wings. I descend from a red ladder, which is huge. It's really high up, but super fun. And, I'm just at the beginning of Act 3. I'm supposed to kind of blend in with the other carnival people. But the director, Doug, said that I really want the old lady's job. I want the witch's job, and I have not been promoted, and I'm just really upset about it.
I see.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of the other singers.
So Hansel and Gretel are, Hansel is played by Megan Marino, and it's her debut here. And Gretel is played by Rachel Gilmore, also her debut. And they are so sweet.
They're darling. Yeah.
They're really short and tiny, and so you look at them on stage, and they actually blend in with the other kids that are on stage.
The kids' chorus is the same height.
They are. It's amazing. And they've had great careers so far. They've performed at the Met and lots of other places. You can look them up online, find out more information about them. But they have had a lot of fun dancing around like kids. I know Megan Hansel said she watched one of the kids in the chorus a lot to see how he walked and moved and just
facial expression and all that.
Yeah,
so she can imitate.
Done a lot of role study for a woman to play a little boy.
Yeah, sure.
So she's a mezzo soprano singing that, and then Rachel's doing a wonderful job. A little bit of I'm the older sister. This is what I'm going to do, and then Hansel says no, but I'm the brother, and I'm strong, and I'm going to find our way out of the woods. So you'll see a lot of action, a lot of dancing, and a lot of characterization between the two of them. And then you want to talk about the other two characters in the opera?
Oh, goodness. Troy Cook, the father, he's just beautiful, beautiful voice, and he plays a very just loving father figure, and the kids absolutely adore him, just adore him. And the mother, who is also playing the witch, is Victoria Livengood, and she, both of her characters just are very strong presence. Like, just as sweet as the father is, she's a little bit more coarse, shall we say. And so the mother, she's very greedy, and to the point of, like, she even keeps food away from her children, like, because they're a very poor family. And that's why the kids go off looking for, you know, berries or something to eat on their own, and why they're so intrigued by all these sweets and all that. And so you'll see the mother just, like, have a bag of bread that she keeps for herself. So, I mean, that's the kind of personality we see the mother have, and not a good relationship with the kids. And so it kind of plays to the fact that when they see the witch, there's some similarities between the witch and the mother. And the witch, Victoria, Miss Vicky, let me tell you what, when she loves playing the witch. She said it, but you can tell too when you see her on stage. The sounds that she makes, and her voice, the colors that she can add to that is just perfect for the character, and you can tell that she has a lot of fun playing it too.
Isn't that the best way?
Oh yeah,
especially if you have a role like the witch. Or whatever.
Yeah.
You can have fun with the role. See, a lot of people, you know, I mentioned earlier that it is sung in German with English subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have said to me, you know, is that hard to follow? You've seen a lot of shows over there. And I said, not really. The subtitles are on the chair behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can read that. Or if you don't need that, you can turn it off. Mm-hmm. The program gives a pretty good synopsis about mm-hmm. what's going on. A lot of times in theater, they don't want you to know what's coming up. But that is made clear mm-hmm. in the opera for obvious reasons to follow.
Yeah, and I think the actors, they do such a great job of, you know, like, there's just a lot of action that you'll see. You'll know what's going on even without hearing anything. You know, the music speaks for itself, and the physical movements, and there's just a lot. Doug has a lot of funny little things that happen. Like, you see April descending and sticking a wad of gum on the side of her ladder. Like, things like that. You'll be entertained regardless of if you can speak German or not.
Yeah, you have a lot of license, I guess, to have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's going to judge you like they would judge a production of Shakespeare, where people are just hanging on every word. I'm sure they hang on every word also, but you have a lot of levity as far as what you can do, as far as routines and things like that.
Right, and our goal is to tell a story.
Right.
So with this one, the good thing is people kind of know what happens with Hansel and Gretel. So our goal here is to tell it in an newer way, a different take on what could happen.
Exactly.
Perhaps a slightly darker version?
It is.
Is it a safe interpretation for me to say that?
Yeah, the colors, and when you see the opening of Act 1, everything's kind of black and white. The only color on stage comes in these two posters that advertise the carnival that's mm-hmm. happening. So it's very black and white, and then by the end, when the kids wake up, when Hansel waves the wand and hocus pocus holder bush, and he swings the wand around, the kids go, hi! And they're like, so excited, and they're in color. Their clothes are in color, and they have come back to life because these kids stumbled upon this
magic.
This witch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they use the magic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very heartwarming. It is grim, but it is totally appropriate for kids. You can go on the website. I think there's some disclaimers about how old a child maybe should be, but the kids that are in the opera mm-hmm. are in late elementary school and early middle school, and mm-hmm. they are having a blast.
Oh, yeah, they are.
They dance around. They're lifted by the dancers a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They play hopscotch and jump rope, and you kind of, when you're watching it, you're like, yeah, I did that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Well, when you're a kid in the show, speaking as a kid who was in shows, it doesn't matter how scary it is.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the way you learn the part and the way it unfolds, there's just not a lot of scariness to it. I just harken back to Linda Blair and some of the things. She was in The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
She was the young girl in The Exorcist. And then people ask her, did that affect you as a child? We shot so little at a time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Everything was done so little at a time. It just didn't seem like the finished product at all. And it's probably a lot like that for the kids in your show. I mean, this... You're going to be scared about that when you know all the behind-the-scenes things.
Right.
I mean, you know what the new fairy is going to do. In fact, you know her off stage.
Right,
from that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It has,
get hugs off stage.
Yeah. Right. That's a little hard to be intimidated. The Lyric Opera production of Hansel and Gretel opens this Saturday evening, the 17th, at 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Performances continue then Wednesday, the 21st, at 7:30. At the opera, they don't sing back-to-back nights. I guess the voices need a bit of a rest.
Right, because our parts are small. We could do it every night.
Yeah.
But Hansel and Gretel barely leave the stage.
Right.
And Vicky, who's singing The Witch and the Mother, is only off stage for Act Two, really.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a day off to recuperate, and then we're fresh for the next performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so open Saturday the 17th, 7:30, Wednesday the 21st at 7:30, then we jump to Friday the 23rd, also at 7:30 p.m., and things close out on Sunday the 25th with a 2 o'clock p.m. matinee at the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. You can make arrangements or make inquiries, I should say, online at kcopera.org. Two phone numbers that you could try out. The local number, which is probably the central ticket office, if I'm looking at that right, 816-471-7344. And then there is an out-of-the-area number. If you have to make a toll-free call, they've got that covered for you as well. 1-800-OPERA-KC, and that, of course, translated numbers to 1-800-673-7252. We're speaking with Laurel Weir and April Martin, two of the characters in the show. Sounds like you're having, from the way you describe it, at least you're having just as much fun getting ready you probably will do once the show begins.
For sure.
Yeah, well, as an apprentice, I guess you both were apprentices. One, mm-hmm. You're still one. You're a resident artist. What kind of shows have you done in the past?
Everything has been at a school up until this point. So, but I have been in the Clemenza di Tito. It's a Mozart opera. I was the Countess in the Nozze di Figaro, the Mother in Amahl and the Night Visitors. And I've done various scenes and things too for summer programs.
Now, how many languages now have we covered?
German, Italian, French, English. I've done a little Russian and a little Czech. Yeah.
That sounds difficult.
It's challenging, but I absolutely love it, and there's nothing else I'd rather be doing.
What about April?
I agree. Nothing else I'd rather be doing. If you came to see Carmen, I was Fresquita. I was the higher-voiced gypsy, and that was a blast. That was in April and the first part of May. In March, so I just finished my apprenticeship in May, and so I was with UMKC, and I sang the governess in The Turn of the Screw by Benjamin Britten, which is based on the novel by Henry James. And then, as I mentioned before, with the dancers, I was the second wood sprite in Rusalka, which was in Czech. And when I first looked at that opera, it was very intimidating. Yeah. But I grew to love the language and what I could do with it. And I just had fun in my awesome dreadlocks.
Sure.
Yeah, so that was a really beautiful production that we did last November.
Now, I can't tell you how many opera singers I've talked to on here. And I will ask them, you know, how did it all begin for you? And many of them have said things like, well, you know, I actually sung normal songs. I sung Broadway songs. Mm-hmm. And at some point, someone took them aside and said, you know, you have the right kind of voice to do this. You should consider trying opera.
Yep.
And I've heard this story several times. Yeah. So how did it work with each of you?
That was exactly my story. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would sing all the time in, like, church choirs and things like that. I did a lot of stuff at the church that I grew up in. And then by the time I was in college, my voice teacher said, have you ever considered opera? And I hadn't even seen an opera by that point. In my junior year, I started studying with her and started focusing. I learned my first arias. I was singing in Italian, had no idea what I was singing or what it meant, and I had to start all that from scratch. And I actually did a summer program in Siena, Italy, and I was there for about 5 weeks. I saw La Boheme. That was my first opera, and it was actually in Puccini's villa. There was an opera stage built there after he passed away, And it was the most incredible experience to see an opera written by him performed in the place where he lived. And I fell in love, absolutely fell in love. And that was when I knew I could be away from my family and friends for weeks at a time. That was a test, too.
We once had a Puccini festival here in town, but Andy Anderson, who directed it, moved on to, I guess, Mobile, Alabama.
Oh,
he's in New York now.
Oh, okay.
But he did, was it, did they say to you, Laurel, it's your voice. It's the kind of voice you have that would make you perhaps suitable for this.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the kind of voice?
Yes, that's what my teacher told me. And it, once I began studying and singing, I finally felt like I fit. Like, I knew that my voice was a bigger sound and there was more to it than what I was doing with it. And with singing opera, it's really like you get to test what you're made of kind of thing. Like, you use every facet of your brain when it comes to focusing, learning languages, studying physically, like the running around on stage, and then the fun of, like, dressing up in costumes. Like, I always knew that I wanted to sparkle and make that my profession, and so now I get to.
What about April? How did it start?
So, my parents tell me that they would catch me everywhere with books or magazines, often turned upside down, singing la 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 everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so they knew I loved to sing and put me in choirs and all sorts of things growing up. And then in college, I was doing a music education degree, and a famous mezzo-soprano, Dolores Ziegler, who had a great career in Germany, she graduated from my college in Tennessee and came back to give a master class, like a public voice lesson. She apparently pulled my teacher aside and said, she needs to go to grad school for this. She's got something. Mm-hmm. So my teacher told me that, and I was floored because I thought I had no business. I just had never really seen operas. I was just kind of starting to watch them. Mm-hmm. I was in voice lessons, but really focusing on music education. And so I went to Cleveland and got into the master's program there and started studying. And actually, my first opera that I was in was Hansel and Gretel. We just did the first act, and we did it in English, but that was my first experience, and I just loved it and went to Germany, like I said earlier, and saw in this opera program what people were doing and the type of rep everybody, different voice sizes, different physical sizes of people, what they were doing, and I was like, oh, this is what I have been missing out on.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you opera people do travel. I interview the singers and say, well, where will you be next? Well, at Paris.
Right.
Yeah. Paris, London. One guy was based out of London, but he traveled all around. So you put a lot of miles on your passport.
Right.
Yeah. My grandmother jokes that every time she calls me, she has to ask where I am because she can't keep it straight. But then they also, it's fun. She also says that I get to keep up with family members that live in New York City or outside of New York City or in San Francisco because we travel, and I try to stay with whomever I can instead of booking hotels whenever possible.
Right.
And
sure.
So it's fun to catch up with extended family or really good friends that you met at a summer program or on a gig and be in their home briefly and give them some chocolate and a thank you card and just hope that you can do the same thing for them down the line.
With the kind of communications we have now, be it Facebook, cell phones, all that, you're really not out of communication if you don't want to be.
Right.
That's the beautiful thing about that. Well, Hansel and Gretel opens this Saturday the 17th at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Four performances, Saturday the 17th, Wednesday the 21st, Friday the 23rd. All of those are at 7:30 p.m. Then a Sunday matinee to close things out on the 25th at 2 o'clock p.m. All at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, a production of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. The number to call for more information, 816-471-7344, or if you're calling from outside of the immediate Kansas City area, 1-800-OPERA-KC, and that translates to 673-7252. And of course, you can go online at kcopera.org. I want to thank both of my guests for coming with me today, enlightening us on the president apprenticeship and resident artist program, which they're both involved with. You'll probably see them in other things as time comes. Kicking off the 59th season of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City with a production of Hansel and Gretel. All opens this Saturday, the 17th.
Come see us.
Yeah. I want to thank you both for being with us. Laura Weir, who plays the Sandman, and April Martin, who plays the Dew Fairy, all in the production of Hansel and Gretel. Thanks so much for
being
here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Jazz Insider is next. Still, either of you ever sang jazz?
A little.
Yeah, a little. Yeah.
Jazz Insider is next. Sam Wiseman is with us. He'll be playing some of the finest jazz heard anywhere in town. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that car on the road, I'm Michael Hoke. We'll see you next time.